Substack charges a 10% fee to writers. And that's pretty high. And the problem with Substack right now and its current business model is that it risks being disrupted, right? By another service that provides the same functionality at a cheaper price point. It's just a commodity. It's like, can you send paid newsletters? And as long as Substack keeps its current model, you know, it'll always risk being disrupted by a newcomer who offers to do the job for cheaper, right? As long as it just focuses on being supply side, it can be swapped out at any point in the value chain by someone who offers to do the job cheaper. But if Substack pivots, I wouldn't even say pivots, but it just increases its mission to include aggregating and generating, you know, reader demand, it's in a much safer position. It has a much stronger moat. Right, you know, imagine that Substack was able to offer, you know, a personalized algorithm, right, where it knows what I like to read, it knows what the best performing pieces on Substack are, right, and it can start to lead me and direct me towards writers that I like. Once that occurs, then Substack starts being a destination site, right, for readers, and then people type in Substack.com when they want to read, you know, great long form writing, and then once it has readers on board, well then, you know, all these writers will be like, you know, I could start my own independent blog, you know, like manage my own payments, you know, use Memberful plus MailChimp, you know, to make sure I like send out a paid newsletter. You know, but I like, you know, Substack because, you know, it offers this like personalized feed, you know, and it like targets my readers, it helps discovery, right? You know, people will discover my blog, you know, I'm just an up and coming new writer, you know, who's ever going to find me, you know? And so they're like, oh, I want to hook into Substack, right? And so now all these like writers are like, you know, coming into Substack because they want some of that readership, you know, that Substack is able to generate. And then that's where we start to see the flywheel turn, right? As more like writers come onto Substack, that means more readers want to go there because they have much better writing, you know, from this wide variety of writers that are on the platform.
Yeah.
And then because they have more readers, more writers want to write on Substack, right? And so now you have this increasing flywheel. And so that kind of justifies their 10%, you know, cut of writer revenue. A way to think about it is your writers are your talent. Take like an old media organization like the New York Times, right?
Yeah.
All of its value is in its talent.
Yeah.
Right? It's not that it can produce a website. The whole value that accrues to the company, the New York Times, is because its writers produce content that people want to read. And so I think in any kind of supply side oriented company, you're always just going to be at the service of talent. You know, the best writers will go to whatever place on the internet where they think that their talents are best monetized. And so you're always in a scramble, I would say, to the bottom.
What do you mean by that?
There's always some service that will come along and offer to the same job for cheaper. Instead of taking 10%, taking 5%. Substack also has some network effects, right? Because writers are like, hey, I started my Substack. I'm now able to make an independent living off of it. Matt Taibbi, like, quit Rolling Stones magazine and is now just going all in on Substack. But the thing is, like, it's now possible for a journalist to be independent. They don't need to be behind a brand.
Yeah.
Because all the tools that they need are available to them. And so if you are this, you know, wannabe independent journalist, you're going to go with a tool, you know, that's reliable, that other people use, right, to minimize your risk, right? And so Substack does have a little bit of network effects in the sense that, like, as more writers join the platform, then more and more writers will join the platform because it's known as a, you know, reliable service.
Yeah, that's true. Although I can still see, like, for the writers who join the platform, like, a risk is similar to the problem that you're facing right now. It's like, how to find customers? Because it's like, initially, it's going to be pretty hard, right, to generate enough audience to give them enough revenue to have a living.
Right. I mean, this is sort of a chicken and egg problem, I would say.
Yeah.
Right, in any two-sided marketplace, do you generate demand? Do you generate supply? I think something that's helpful is to like look at Uber. Should we focus on demand side? Should we focus on supply side? And kind of the direction they took is they focused on supply side. Their kind of thinking was that like, look, there's going to be demand for transportation within cities. People are going to need to get from A to B within a city. It's almost like our demand is guaranteed, but our supply is not. If drivers don't like using Uber as a platform to, like, you know, make a living, they won't use Uber. They'll use another service, right? So Uber, like, really focused a lot of its attention on, like, acquiring and retaining the supply side of the equation, because they believed that like the demand side was kind of a given, right? That people needed to move around in the city.
Interesting. Yeah, because I'm trying to think about, is demand a given though? Because it's like, yes, I can move, like there's always going to be demand to move around, but then there's so many services to use.
But you know, kind of what we were talking about was like, is demand a given, right? That was a question. And I would say, not always. You know, sometimes part of it's like you got to drum up your own demand too, right? Is there a demand for, you know, 280 character messages? Well, it's like, I don't know.
They created it.
Right, but they created it, right? It's like the best companies create their own market, right? And it's like Uber is like vastly bigger than the taxi market because it just simplified demand, right? It's like if you wanted to get from A to B, now there's a button you can push on your phone.
Yeah.
So that vastly increases the market size, right? And so if you increase the market size, that's the total demand, right? And then it's like you want to capture some portion of it. I think if your service has value to like an end user, I would say that increasing demand, I think, is almost like a requirement.